Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
I want to welcome everybody as you're joining us. Thanks for taking time out of your weekend to be with us. I'm really glad to have you here. I'm Julianne Eidelman. I'm currently the Director of Communications for Hand in Hand. I've been with the organization for a decade and had lots of different jobs there and work at Hand in Hand because the Hand in Hand tools were so incredibly effective at my house. So it's purely out of just amazed gratitude. I was kind of shocked by how well this approach worked for us. And I was very excited about it and wanted everybody to know about it. So today we're going to be talking about setting limits and building cooperation in your family. And in just a second, I'm going to introduce our speaker, Kathy Gordon. Kathy's a hand-in-hand and parenting by connection instructor in LA. But real quickly, before I hand things over to Kathy, I just want to tell you a little bit about hand-in-hand, the nonprofit organization that provides all different kinds of resources for parents. And we'll talk at the end of the call a lot more about the different kinds of resources and how you can take advantage of the many, many different resources that are available for parents from Hand in Hand. Hand in Hand's been around for over 25 years. It's a nonprofit that was started by Patty Whistler in Palo Alto. And we've been doing classes and workshops and free parenting calls and all kinds of training for many, many years now, and this spring, Patty has her first book coming out, so we're really excited about that. The title of the book is Listen, and it's all about how to use some simple parenting tools to really build the warmth and connection that we hope all families will have. So, now I'm going to introduce you to Kathy Gordon. Kathy, as I mentioned, is in the Los Angeles area. Kathy also does a lot of work with our members program. So I don't know if any of you are in the Parent Club, the membership program, but you may already be familiar with Kathy. Kathy is the adoptive single mom of a, I guess he's a preteen now, right?
Yeah, he's 12.
Gosh, it goes fast. and Kathy has a lot of experience with setting limits. Kathy also is trained in several other parenting approaches. So Kathy's got a breadth of experience that she can help bring to this idea of setting limits and building cooperation in your family. Kathy has also worked closely with Patty in several other teleseminars. So if you want to hear other things from Kathy, you can feel free to email me when you get your replay for this call, and I'll be happy to share other talks that Kathy's given, other information about things that Kathy has done. So Kathy's going to talk a little bit this morning about the why of different ways of setting limits and why some of the ways we've grown up with just aren't effective long term. And then she's going to tell us more about why we set limits at Hand in Hand the way we do. So, Kathy, you want to take it away?
Great. Thanks, Julie. And thank you to all of the great parents who have either carved out time on this Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon or evening, depending on where you are in the world, and also all of the parents that are going to carve out time to listen to this recording, where we're just so inspired by your commitment and grateful for you taking this time to explore ways to really be the parent that you want to be. And as Julie said, I'm a single adoptive mom of a 12-year-old boy. He was placed with me when he was 10 days old, sorry, when he was 10 days old. So I'm the only mom he knows. And he was born here where we live in Los Angeles. And I really started struggling as a parent, I think, when my son was about 2, and there's a local organization here in town that teaches nonviolent parenting, kind of nonviolent communication, and so I started taking classes there and was trained there, and but we were still struggling, especially with my son's really big tantrums and huge difficulty with transitions, and then there started to be some aggression, and I had read some of Patty's material, and I really started following on the Yahoo discussion group that Julie's going to tell you more about later, and started seeing that, oh, like, this is what I need for my son, for my family. So my son was about 4 or 5 at the time, and the Parenting by Connection tools made such a huge difference in our lives that I've been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, and it's natural that I would become certified instructor of hand-in-hand parenting. And I'm really excited to be on this call talking about building cooperation, because what every parent and every child wants is a peaceful home. I think it's really important to keep that in mind, that our kids also really want peace. And what I love about our approach is that we really believe that at their core, children are good and they really do want to cooperate with us. So what's happening when they don't? Well, the short story is that in order for any human being to function well, that means whether you're 2 or 82, you need to be, in order to be flexible in your thinking and be able to plan and cooperate and reason and so on, all parts of your brain need to be integrated. And in order for that to happen, the brain has to sense safety and connection. So when children feel connected to a loving adult and really seen by that adult and they feel safe, then they're easily able to access their higher or their cortical brain. And then they're cooperative and they're clear thinking. But when that connection breaks, and it breaks all the time, it breaks when we have to, it breaks in a small way where we have to turn around to answer the telephone, or when we have more than one and now we have to take care of the baby, or maybe there was a big break, particularly with my son, where like his first experience coming into the world was a break with his biological mother, or maybe a child is put into NICU, so those are bigger breaks. So when there's a break, the emotional brain, which we call the limbic system, it takes over, and it effectively shuts down our access to the prefrontal cortex. And that makes it impossible for our child to access those higher functions. We may be talking to our child, asking them to do or to not to do something, but they're disconnected. They can't feel us or hear us, and they definitely can't think. So the bottom line is, in order for a child to cooperate, they need to be able to think, and in order to be able to think, they need to feel safe and connected. So keeping that in mind, that in order for a child to cooperate, I'm kind of repeating myself because it's so important, in order for a child to cooperate, they need to be able to think, in order to be able to think, they need to feel safe and connected. I want to look for a minute at some of the most common ways we parents try to get cooperation. So one of the most popular ways of handling an uncooperative or defiant child is to ignore them, just walk away, or isolate them. Put them in timeout in the naughty chair, and there's even a formula, you know, 1 minute for each year of their age. You might threaten to take something away, or you might give something in the form of a bribe. If they're crying, you might try to distract them, try to placate them with another activity. And then there are routines. We're told that routines are the way to create cooperation. Well, I originally sought help from Hand in Hand because I was really struggling with bedtime. And we had a routine. We had a great routine. Every night after bath time, we'd read two books, and then it was lights out. And every night, my son would start to cry and throw a fit. And I kept thinking to myself, when is he going to get with the program? Well, earlier in my parenting, I tried each of these strategies at one time or another. And when Julie asked me to do this call, I was thrilled because I call myself a recovering permissive parent. I started out trying to be very permissive. I wanted to be this unconditionally loving parent, so I tried to be patient. I tried to negotiate, work out the problem, work around any potential upset by never saying no. It was exhausting. And so many times I would lose my patience and then just snap and start yelling. Well, like most parents, I found that some of the strategies work in the short run, but two things were happening. Even if my son complied in the moment out of fear, it wasn't long before we were in the midst of another problem or another battle. And secondly, it felt like our relationship was deteriorating. Parenting felt like a constant power struggle with me trying to exert control over him and get him to behave. There was little to no joy and certainly no fun. So why were these two things happening? Well, let's go back to the brain science I was talking about. In order for a human being to be able to think well and cooperate, they need to feel safe and connected. And just about all of the strategies I just mentioned, particularly putting a child in timeout, there's no connection. In fact, taking away my attention and affection, that was supposed to make my child cooperate. But it was a feeling of disconnection within my son that was causing the off-track behavior in the first place. So using threats or timeouts, it only adds to my son's sense of disconnection and fear. So I was so relieved when I learned about the hand-in-hand parenting by connection tool setting limits. I'm going to give you a description of it, but I'll just say on a personal note, what I loved about it was that it's not permissive, so I could let go of this idea that in order for my son to feel loved, I needed to be permissive. And it was also not punitive. So it was based on really preserving and deepening our connection and our relationship. So we teach four parent-to-child listening tools. And setting limits is one of those tools. The four are special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits. So setting limits is one of our listening tools, and the way we teach parents to set limits is unique. In fact, I think we're the only approach that talks about setting limits as a listening tool. We teach a three-step process. Listen, limit, listen. So the first step, listen, is super important. Here, we really want to take a look at the situation and decide whether or not a limit is necessary. So, for example, a third cookie or a second piece of cake might be okay at a midday birthday party, but then you may decide that a limit on the amount of cookies, the amount of cake, makes sense on a Sunday night after dinner. Once you've decided a limit is in order, it works much better to bring the limit by moving our bodies close to the child, getting down on their level, and making eye contact. We might need to gently hold a hand that keeps popping up to hit or block a leg that's ready to kick. If a child is hitting or teasing, we need to physically move in with a limit to keep everyone safe, both physically and emotionally. this idea of bringing the limit is crucial. Remember, I keep saying, I know it's like a broken record, that in order for a child to think, they need to feel safe and connected. So if your child is doing some nutty behavior or won't listen, it means they're off track, disconnected, and can't think. When we bring the limit to them, we are offering connection. We're saying no to the off-track behavior and yes to our warm attention and connection. And then comes step three, listen. It's important to remember that we set the limits, but we don't get to decide how our children feel about the limits we set. And this can be really tough for us as parents. There's so much emphasis on how our children behave in the world. And if our children are misbehaving, that must mean there's something wrong with them, and there's definitely something wrong with us. And all the strategies I mentioned before are designed to get our kids to behave as quickly as possible. And that's probably what was expected of you as a child. I know it was certainly what was expected of me. No one listened to my feelings. Maybe you even heard, you know, if you don't stop that, I'll give you something to cry about. But listening to our children's feelings is where we really get the goodies. Because there was some feeling of disconnection, disappointment, some ding or dent from the day, or maybe even from that difficult time earlier in their lives that was driving the off-track behavior. So when we listen to them tantrum or cry, they get to release that gunk from their limbic system. We like to call it their emotional backpack. So they get to empty their emotional backpack, and that's when the healing happens. It sometimes looks ugly and messy, but if you listen through to the end, you'll see a brighter, happier, calmer child emerge, and you'll have a deepened relationship. The quickest way I've seen to change my child's behavior is to listen to the big feelings that come up when I set a limit for him. So I'll tell you a little story about a time when my son was off track and cranky, and setting a limit really helped him get on back on track. Now, often we're setting a limit that's really obvious. We need to stop them from hitting the dog, or it's time to leave the park. That's a really obvious limit. In this case, I actually decided to hold a limit to help my son get back on track. So my son, because of the way he came into the world, excuse me, I have a little scratchy throat this morning. Just took a sip there. So because of the way he came into the world, he's had some gut issues, some neurological issues, and we've done some different therapies, one of which was a special diet called the GAPS diet. And we've been on that diet for about a year, or since the beginning of the year, and now it was Halloween. And for the last few years, my son had gone out trick-or-treating with a group of boys in our neighborhood. This year, he couldn't decide if he wanted to go because, of course, you know, he'd be getting candy in his bag, and he would not be able to touch any of it. So I decided to offer him the alternative of going to a movie, but he couldn't decide. And this is often a clear sign that your child can't think. You offer them ideas, and nothing seems to satisfy them. He asked to go shopping for a costume, but he was irritable, snappy, couldn't make any decision. Even though he decided to go trick-or-treating, he was definitely unhappy and off track. So he hadn't done his audiovisual therapy that day, and so I set a limit that he had to do the program before we could go. And this was just the pretext he needed. He begged, pleaded, tried to negotiate, threw himself on the couch and cried. I didn't say much. I just was there giving my warm attention. I was present. Every once in a while, I would lovingly repeat the limit that he had to do his program. And I just made eye contact. At one point, he did try to hit me, and I have these great little trifold mats. I grabbed the mat so he could pummel the mat, and I could keep us both safe. And finally, he slumped down on the couch and had about five to seven minutes of hard crying. Then he heaved a big sigh and said he was ready to do his program, which he did, and then we went off to join his friends. I sensed during all this, but he wasn't just crying about having to do his program. He was crying about the unfairness of having to be on this special diet and possibly even the unfairness of being adopted. The interesting thing about that night was that he had a great time. He whooped and hollered and ran from house to house with his friends collecting candy that he later gave away to the dentist to get money, you know, and he did that without the slightest complaint the next day. It was pretty amazing to me that he was able to take this unfair situation, offload about it, and completely turn it around. And I didn't have to fix it or try to make it better for him in any way. You know, that's what kids naturally do when they get off track. They'll look for a pretext, a reason to get upset, and then they'll use your warm attention to release the gunk that's keeping them from being happy and joyful. All we have to do in that moment is to listen, decide if we want to set a limit, then set the limit by bringing the limit to them along with our warm attention, and then listen to them offload the feelings that were driving the off-track behavior in the first place. Offering a sense of safety and connection along with a clear limit that we bring to them is a great way to get our natural, happy, and cooperative kiddo back as we preserve and deepen our connection. Now, I know this is not as easy as it sounds, particularly if you were not parented this way. It's a practice that's going to take longer than listening to me for 15 minutes. Julie's going to share some ideas on how you can learn more about our listening tools and how to get support through our programs to be this kind of connected, limit, and listening parent. And then I'm going to answer any questions that you have if we want to go into a little bit more specifics of your situations. So, Julie?
Thank you so much, Kathy.
You're welcome.
That was a wonderful synopsis in 15 minutes. one thing I want to go back to is setting limits with warmth. Because I've got to tell you, until I was involved in hand-in-hand parenting, this had never, ever crossed my mind as a thing to do. In the house I grew up in, setting limits was something that you had to be mad to set a limit. And limits were set very harshly. And so I thought I had to be mad to set a good limit. And Patty was giving a talk for the local, the big mothers group in San Jose. And I went to this talk. And she was talking about setting limits, and there was a woman in the front row who was had her leg crossed over her knee and was kind of jiggling her foot. And Patty walked down from in front of the podium, and she went over to this woman, and she kind of squeezed into the seat between this woman and the woman next to her. And she said, I can't let you do that, and put her hand playfully on this woman's leg. And so the woman, like, got with the program right away and started, like, jiggling her leg even more. And Patty would just playfully say, I can't let you do that, and gently put her hand on her leg to still this woman jiggling or whatever. You know, she was popping her leg back and forth. And they were both laughing. She was setting a limit while they were both laughing.
Hmm.
And that absolutely blew my mind. It had seriously never occurred to me that I could playfully and warmly address the limits that my child needed. I didn't have to yell. I didn't have to get all angry and be mad about it. I could bring a clear and healthy limit right away. You know, I didn't have to wait until I was aggravated by the behavior. And just having that shift in mindset led to a phenomenal shift in the way I looked at my relationship with my child and working together so that we could all get what we needed. It was a big mind shift for me. So if this sounds a little weird to you, I get it. And I also encourage you to try it out and experiment with how this process works for you. But right now I want to tell you a little bit about some of the many different ways that Hand in Hand can help you with whatever your parenting issues might be. I mentioned that Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. It's been around for over 25 years. And one of the things that makes this organization so strong is a dedicated donor base that contributes to Hand in Hand on a regular basis and makes it possible for us to do a lot of free work and provide a lot of services that don't cost parents anything. There are certainly some services that have a fee attached to them, but I want to up front talk to you about the scholarships that are available. If you want to take part in some resource that Hand in Hand offers, and it's really not in the budget for you right now, I encourage you to take advantage of our scholarship option, because there are lots of people who contribute in small ways and large ways year after year to make sure these services are available to parents in every community. There's also a program that our instructors are part of that brings Hand in Hand services to communities of need every year. Last year, we raised about $15,000 for a match that brought parenting support services and parenting classes to homeless communities and really whatever the community of need that our instructor chose for their project. So don't ever feel like you need to be excluded from anything that Hand in Hand offers because it has a price tag. One of the best things to use for setting limits and building cooperation is our online self-guided video class. This is a class that has 3 weeks of materials divided up in reading materials, video materials, and homework that you do with your kids, all around the idea of setting good limits and building cooperation. You don't have to actually do it in 3 weeks. You can spend 6 months on it if you need to, or you can go through all the material in 1 weekend if you want to. It's self-paced. But it gives you an opportunity to really think deeply about why you set the limits you do, why you set limits in the way that you do, how limits were set for you, and what part of that works for you that you want to keep in your family, and what parts of that might not work for you that you don't want to move forward in your family. The Setting Limits and Building Cooperation online class is a $39 class, and you can see some examples of the videos from it on our website if you check it out. It's very, very popular, so I hope you will take a look. There are other free parenting calls like this one. In fact, we try to offer at least 2 every month. The next one that's on the schedule is all about how to find the support that you need as a parent in an information overloaded world. That's on March 6th, and it's being put on by 2 of our instructors who are from Australia. Hand in Hand has instructors all over the world. In fact, we were very, very proud to announce our first classes in Beijing just a couple weeks ago. So that was very exciting. The free parenting calls are always recorded. We know you're busy, and many more people end up listening to the recordings than people that come live. If you know ahead of time that you're not going to be able to make it to the call live, please feel free to email your questions ahead of time if you've got specific questions that you'd like to be answered on the call. And we'll answer them during the call, and you can hear the answer when you have a chance to listen to the recording. The number one thing that parents do that they tell us really transforms their lives with their children is to take the hand-in-hand parenting starter class. That's a class that has, you can do it in person with a local instructor like Kathy, or you can do it online where you listen to your classroom materials and get your reading online, but you talk to your instructor and a small group of parents, and I mean like three or four other parents, not 200 people that are on this call, but a group of less than six usually, who are all going through the class together at the same time with the same instructor, and you meet for weekly conference calls during the class for 6 weeks while you go through the online materials and the homework and the reading so that you have support while you're learning all the different tools. And you have this small group of parents that you can learn from, and you can hear how it's going at their house and what worked for them, and share your path with them and your struggles. The starter classes are, like I said, they're available in different parts of the world. If you have a local instructor, you'll be able to find them on our calendar or on the map under Who We Are, Certified Instructors, on our website. So you can sign up for those classes online or in person. And that's probably, you know, for most people, that's the big aha. But another thing that's well worth doing, if you'd like to meet with or get to know a community of people that are really trying to parent in this conscious, peaceful way, we have a number of parent discussion groups. Kathy already mentioned that there's one on Yahoo that functions by email. So you can join the discussion group. It's a free group, and there are thousands of people on the email list, and you can pop your questions up there. You can say, oh my gosh, my son will not sit in his car seat. What have you tried? What have you, you know, what's worked for you? Or you can just lurk and read other people's stories and see how things are going at their house. There are also groups like this on Facebook. There's a special group. If you happen to be in the San Francisco Bay Area, or you happen to be in the New York metro area, I see a couple people in Connecticut who might be interested in that. There's a local parent hand-in-hand parenting group on Facebook for those communities. There's also a special group on Facebook for parents of older kids and preteens. And there's another one for parents who speak Spanish. The big group on Facebook is called Hand-in-Hand Parent Support. And anybody can ask to join. It says it's a closed group on Facebook, which doesn't mean you can't get in it. It means you got to ask and we'll let you in. And, of course, we'd be happy to have you. So if you'd like to connect with other people that are parenting this way and who want to offer support and suggestions and share that kind of camaraderie, I guess you'd say, you're certainly welcome in the discussion group. It can be a great way to get to know some other parents that are doing this. if you've got particular parenting challenges, or you've got a delicate parenting situation that you're working with and you don't want to talk about it in a more or less public forum, you're absolutely welcome to have a consultation that's one-on-one with one of our parent consultants. You can request those on the Hand in Hand website, and you can talk to a consultant one-on-one on phone or on Skype, and Hand in Hand will match you up with the consultant that best suits your needs and help you deal with whatever the particulars are. That's a great service if you've got very specific questions or you've got a situation that you know is not a common one that people deal with a lot. Another great way to get some local connection going is to participate in one of our free hand-in-hand study groups. Hand-in-Hand publishes a series of small booklets called Listening to Children. And what you do is you get together like a book group and you read through the booklets together and you get together and you talk about them and you get to know one another and you get to listen to one another and you get to have your parenting concerns heard. Every candidate who wants to get certified to teach hand-in-hand tools offers these free study groups. And in fact, any parent anywhere can offer them. You can have your own. If you go to the website, there's a guide that tells you all about how to host your own hand-in-hand study group. Gives you the directions, where to put your flyers, and we're also happy to let people know that you're having a group if you're in a particular location and you want to reach out to other hand-in-hand parents who are near you. We're happy to help you do that. They're usually groups of anywhere from 4 to 8 other parents, and they usually meet for 6 or 8 weeks. Sometimes they meet every other week, so it takes 16 weeks to have 8 meetings. It just depends on who's running them and where they are and how it works out for people. But that's a great way to get to know some people that are near you who are doing this and get connected to them in real life. If you're one of those people that really wants to do a deep dive into learning something new, and this way of parenting seems like something you want to explore deeply, there are also intensives and retreats, and you can find out more about them on our website. There's a parent retreat on the East Coast in the beginning of June. There's a parenting retreat right this minute in Australia. If you want to think about that for next year, there's a parent retreat on the west coast of the U.S. that happens at the very end of June. And there are parent intensives. There are 2 or 3 parent intensives that happen every year. And those are very, very deep dive, high level of support options. And then, Kathy, I know you're really involved with this membership program, the Parent Club. Is there anything you want to tell people about how or why or when to make use of the resources that are available in the Parent Club?
Sure. We think we've got a great way to get material and information to you in the Parent Club. We have all of these wonderful videos that Patty, instructional videos that Patty has created. And it can be pretty time intensive to sit down and watch them, but we are packaging them for members of our parenting club so that you get, oh, about a 10 to 20 minute video in your email box every week, along with an accompanying article. So it's great because there is like, the big vision that we have for parents everywhere is that there would be this parent rescue service where, you know, if things got a little tough and, you know, the milk spilled all over the floor and your siblings are fighting, that, you know, somebody, there would be a knock on the door and somebody would show up and say, here, I'll help you listen to your child, or here, I'll support you, or I'll listen to you for a few minutes. So we don't quite have the resources to do that yet, but having this, you know, short instructional video that will give you some information on a specific tool for a specific situation, like sleep or setting limits or aggression or siblings, you know, having that show up in your email box your inbox every week, along with this accompanying article, it's as close as we can get right now to like showing up at your door to say, here's a little bit of help. It's, you know, not going to take very long to watch it, or to read the article. So it's just that extra little reminder, that boost, like, oh, right. Yeah. And then in addition to that, there's two live Q&A calls with certified instructors every month where you can come and you can bring your questions. And like everything we do, if you can't make it live, those you can submit questions ahead of time, and the recordings are then in the classroom, posted in the classroom. And there are resource centers in the classroom. So, for example, if you're struggling with sleep, there's a whole resource center on sleep. If you're struggling with sleep with siblings, there's a whole resource center on siblings, where we've collected some of our best articles, our best anecdotes, some of our best video clips. And so you can go there and really focus on exactly what is your issue. Lastly, we're really wanting this to be a community where you can find like-minded parents who are also learning these tools, so that you can, so that perhaps you could pair up, and even if you didn't do an in-person study group, maybe you decided to buddy up with somebody and do a by phone or by Skype study group, or you found somebody else and you did a listening partnership. That's one of our listening tools, our parent-to-parent listening tools we haven't really talked about today. But and there is a discussion board there in that community. I'm actually the instructor who answers your questions on that discussion board. So there's lots of opportunity for you to get support in small, digestible information, in small, digestible increments, live instructors where you can take your questions twice a month, a community of like-minded parents, a discussion board, and where, you know, I'm monitoring it, so you're gonna get really the best hand-in-hand approach, and all of our support. And I'm happy to, when we kind of open it up for questions here in a few minutes, I'm happy to answer any questions about the parenting club or any of the, I also lead a starter class. I've got a starter class, an online starter class that's starting April 5th, I think. It's a Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. It'll go for about an hour to 90 minutes, and it'll be a small group of, as Julie said, maybe four. We cap them at six, so occasionally there's six. I also lead the parent intensive, and I think that's going to be starting up sometime in a new session in mid-April, so I'm happy to answer questions about all of that.
Yeah, I think the deadline for that is March 20th. I have to look if parents want to be part of the next intensive. I know that the deadline's coming up sometime in March. So, Kathy, I'm ready for questions if you are.
Yeah,
do you want to explain to folks how to do that?
Sure. So, excuse me, I'm just going to take a little sip here.
I'm happy to help you answer.
Yeah, my scratchy throat, I apologize. Yeah, so you're going to hit star 2 if you have a question. That'll put everybody in a queue, and I'll go down the line and answer as many questions as I have. I know, I think, Julie, you have to wrap up the call in about 15 minutes, but if there are more people with their hands raised, I'm happy to stay on for another few minutes and answer some more questions. I know, you know, you've been waiting patiently for your questions, so although if we don't get to you, you know, again, the Yahoo discussion group, it's monitored by two wonderful instructors, Michelle Coquel and Rachel Schofield, so they are also a great resource.
Yeah, and the same for the Facebook group. There are two instructors there that will be happy to help you as well. Kathy, do you want to start with the car seat question from earlier?
Sure. I have three people in a line.
Oh,
but
go.
Who is,
whatever makes sense.
Yeah. I think there were several questions in the car seat one. So let me take these three. Is the car seat person still here? I think you were from Oakland. They may not still be here, Julie. That's the only reason I don't see them.
Well, we'll get to them one way or the other.
All right. Okay. All right. So, Elizabeth, I am unmuting you.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. I'll try and make it quick.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Elizabeth. That's a great thing for me to ask people to be laser in their questions, to tell me as little details as possible. If I need clarification, I'm happy to ask for clarification, but that way we can get more people's questions.
Okay. I have a three-year, four-month-old boy named Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in a nutshell, I'm just curious about his tantrums have gotten pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, and he can be very stubborn. And
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how you handle stubbornness. An example, which may be a funny example, but it's the one that happened most recently, but it involves pooping at school. He just started school in September. So it may not be a perfect example, but it's just an example. I came to pick him up from school. The teacher said, you know, he's really upset. He had to go poop. There was one bathroom that was clogged. He wanted to go in that bathroom.
Yeah.
So he couldn't go in that bathroom. So she showed him three other toilets. He chose to not go in the other toilet because he wanted to go in the one he could not go in. And I know it's not a great example because it involves poop and it involves school and all that and safety.
Right.
But it's a perfect example of kind of who he is. You know, I'll give him 20 other, you know, all these other choices, and he just will stick to one thing. And then he just gets angry. And, you know, to the point sometimes we'll throw things. And so, like, what do you – so, yeah. So I guess what you do is the whole limit and listen and limit. So that's it.
Yes. And Elizabeth, you know, we were talking specifically about setting limits on this tool, but we have three other listening tools. And one of the things that's really important about our approach is using them all in tandem. There can be a tendency if you're just setting limits now, you know, we're just the limit police. So, you know, it sounds like what you're seeing is like that, this feeling of like, I need to be in control. I need to be in control. And one of the ways we can address that is through our very powerful tool, Special Time, where we give our child our undivided attention for a finite amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And during that
time or just in general? Because you mean in general throughout the day or during that time when he's being very stubborn?
So separate from that. Let me tell you what special time is, and then we can talk specifics to your situation. So it's a finite amount of time. You're going to give him your undivided attention. You're going to follow his lead and do whatever he wants within safety and time and financial constraints. If you're going to do 10 minutes of special time, you can't go to Disneyland, you know.
Right.
So, but you're going to try to the best of your ability, particularly in the beginning when you first start it, to do whatever he wants for those 10 minutes. And you set a timer. Timer is very important. So, in answer
and
to
you
your
tell
question,
them, you tell them this is your special time. This is what I'm doing.
Yep. They, you tell them and they get to name it so they can ask for it. So yes, in answer to your question, in that moment of, you know, if you, so for example, for my son, I knew that, that transitions were very difficult. The ending of a play date, the, you know, so I would come in and I would offer him, you know, of 2 to 5 minutes of connection time, of special time, of following his lead before I would set the limit of, okay, sweetie, it's time to leave. So I was using special time preventatively, because remember I said, in order for children to cooperate, they need to feel safe and connected.
Right.
And since it seems like what's going on with him is a sense of powerlessness and having needing to control, and that's where that stubbornness comes from, giving him regular special time a few times a day. Yes, it's you don't want to only do it in the moment of upset. You want to,
right?
You know, but too, like you notice, oh, mornings are really hard for him, so we're going to start our mornings with 5 minutes of special time. After school, pickup is really hard for him, so we're going to do 10 minutes of special time right after school. So what that does is that it helps him, it builds his confidence, it builds his sense of power, so that you may not get as many power struggles throughout the day. Now, you still may, because he's three and that's what he's, you know, he's just, it's what he's working on. And he's in this place of like, you know, school there, you know, so-and-so didn't play with me that day, or I was trying to master this and I couldn't master it. So there's a lot of ding and ding. Oh. I'm getting a really bad echo. I don't know why.
Oh, while you're speaking?
How's that, Kathy? Is that any better?
No. You know what, Julie? Maybe I better... Hang on, Elizabeth. Let me just mute you for a second. See if... Is that better?
You sound fine to me the whole time.
Okay. Okay, sorry, Elizabeth. I had to mute you because there's something with your line that's causing me to echo. Sometimes that happens. So I'll unmute you in a second. But I'm not saying that special time is going to be the cure, but you may see less struggles. Oh, I know where I was when I lost my place there. But because of, you know, he's in school and there's lots of dings and disappointments and frustrations and so-and-so didn't play with me this day today. And I, you know, I was trying to master this and I couldn't do it. And they wanted me to sit in circle time and that was too hard for me. You know, just all of that's happening in his emotional processing center. So he's working on a lot of stuff around his own competency, his own confidence. And so special time, regular special time will help some of that, and you will also help him by coming in kindly, warmly, setting a limit without any explanation, just, you know, just, no, sweetie, I can't let you do that right now, and, or even playfully, as Julie was demonstrating, no, 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 can't let you do that. And then listening to his feelings, the more you can listen to his feelings and let him offload those frustrations that he's feeling during the day, the more relaxed he might start to be at other times. One of the things we tell parents when kids seem to be like in a time when they're working on something, like they're working on some kind of emotional project, is that the tantrums may not decrease in intensity, but look for how he is in between the tantrums. Is he lighter? Is he more flexible? Is he a little bit more emotionally resilient? Is he a little easier? And then you know you're headed on the right track. So,
Kathy,
yeah,
I just wanted to add one resource for Elizabeth. If you go to the Hand in Hand website,
there is a free video series on doing special time that's called the 10-Minute Tool. If you look up the 10-Minute Tool on the website, you can get a special time checklist and a video series that's all about doing special time.
Great. And Elizabeth, I'm sorry I can't unmute you because of the distortion, but please feel free to email me if that didn't feel sufficient. All right, we have somebody from Seattle.
This is Carla. I think I'm not directly in Seattle, but my phone number is from Seattle.
Okay, yep, that's what it says. Thanks, Carla.
Yeah, thank you. So I have a 3-year-old as well, and he is just going through a phase the last 2 weeks of hitting me a lot, and he doesn't hit any other kids or other people. It's almost always right before nap. And so just listening to what you said, I'm like, yeah, I could probably notice that and give him special time right before nap, and that may help. So that already gets me an idea. But just wondering if you have anything specifically about hitting that you wanted to share. And he does, I guess one thing is he does it in a kind of playful way. He's not really trying to hurt me.
Right.
You know, and I try and give him options that if you want to play with me, there's lots of other ways we can play and, you know, meet that need, but let him know that he can't hit me or that when I ask and I say that doesn't feel good, I want him to listen to me just like I listen to him when something doesn't feel good.
Great. So first of all, I know Julie's going to have a great website resource for you because we have a video series on we have a whole self-guided class on
aggression,
stopping the hitting, but
yeah, helping kids with hitting and biting. There's a video series on helping kids with aggression that should
mm-hmm.
be very useful for you.
Yeah.
I'll put a link to it in the replay page.
Great.
And Carla, what I would say is that, it's great that he's, first of all, you've identified when it normally happens, you know, when
mm-hmm.
it kind of regularly happens. Secondly, he's not really trying to hurt you, so it
yeah.
seems like it's more his way of trying to connect. So
mm-hmm.
one of the things that children need, particularly boys, is a lot of rough and tumble play.
Mm-hmm.
So so the thing to remember is that in the moment that he's hitting you, he doesn't really have access to the thinking part of his brain. So having a verbal conversation about the ways that you can play with me, it's a little bit of an exercise in futility. But what you could do is that you could immediately then, we have a great article on one of our tools we call the vigorous snuggle. You could immediately come in and give him a vigorous snuggle and say, no, 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 I can't let you do that. Or you could say, oh, I'm going to kiss those hitty hands. So you can connect with him playfully and you can get him giggling, because we talked some about when you set a limit that, you know, your child may start to cry, and that crying is great because it's an offloading of the tension or the disconnection or the disappointment that's driving the behavior, but also laughter is offloading or releasing that tension. So whatever that little knot of tension is that's causing him to try to hit you, going for the laughter by, you know, a little chase game and that's our tool that we call play listening, where, you know, you're gonna kiss those hitty hands, or you're gonna snuggle those hitties right out of him, or no, 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 I can't let you do that. And so you say, I'm the big hitty, no hitty monster, so I'm gonna come, and, you know, so you go towards him with slow motion. Whatever you can do to get him giggling, is going to offload that tension that's causing the hitting. And it's amazing how our kids then start to, my son, even at 12, if I set a limit and he starts to get that tightness and that frustration, it's almost like I don't even have to turn it playful. He tries to turn it playful because he's looking for that laughter to mm-hmm. release that tension.
Right.
So laughter is a great way to handle, you know, that that little aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you're providing the connection that he's looking for. Yeah, great. Thanks.
Great
question.
You.
Julie, I see it's 12:30. Do you, and I have two people with their hands raised. Do you want to do a wrap up and then I'll answer these two questions, or how would you, what would you like to?
Oops, sorry, I had myself on mute there. I want to respect everybody's time. If you need to go, then absolutely, we understand. And you can hear the answers to the questions on the recording if you have time to check it out later. The vigorous snuggle is it's on our website. It's well worth checking out that article. The 10-minute tool is the resource that we mentioned a little bit earlier, all about special time, which can often be the flip side of setting limits. Seems like the more special time you can do, the less setting limits you have to do. And if you find you have to do a lot of setting limits, it might be a whole lot more fun to shift your focus to doing special time. The resources that are available to you from Hand in Hand are all listed together on the page that's called Getting Started. And I hope that something here was helpful for you today. And now I'll let Kathy finish up with some questions. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thanks, Julie. Yes, thanks to all these wonderful parents who are here. And do keep in touch. We try to provide a myriad of ways to keep in touch. You can reach me directly through the website or through my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon. I will admit that directly through the website page is probably better, since it sometimes days go by without me checking Facebook. But please do keep in touch, send your questions, and you know, join us in one of our free communities or one of our classes. We just would love to have you be part of our big growing community. So let's see, Dan. Oh, no. Okay, yes. Hang on.
Questions. One.
Dan.
Yes.
Sorry, you were muted. So.
Oh, hi, thanks. I have two quick questions. I have a 5-year-old. I also have a disability, so my 5-year-old actually is faster than me. So when we need to go, and a child starts running away, and you actually can't catch the child. Any recommendations there? And second, when they're not running, but it's clear, okay, we need to do this or that or the other, how do you judge how non-permissive you get to be, like, physically? Like, you know what I mean? Like, no, we're going to, you know, we need to go now. We need to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, Dan, the piece about is it a boy or a girl that takes off running?
Girl.
It's a girl. And is it taking off in defiance and she's upset, or is it taking off playfully or?
Playfully.
Playfully, okay.
Yeah.
So, and at 5, you've had a conversation about, I'm assuming you've probably had a conversation about how you really need her to stay close and you're worried for her safety, and you've had those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, and generally I'd say this is not outside the home. It's usually inside the home. So I'm not worried about her safety. I'm just
– okay. Oh, okay.
You know, we're trying to get somewhere, and it's – no, you know, basically I want to keep playing or whatever, you know. kind of thing.
Right. So because of your disability, you can't play a chase game with her or you...
I can't. It's not that grave. It's just I literally cannot, if she chooses to run, I literally can't catch her, but I can chase after her. And I have sometimes, but then after a while, it's like, okay, you know, we really do have to go, you know.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I can't.
Yeah.
And she'll want to keep running or she'll, another example is like before eating dinner, she wants a snack and we'll grab, a bag of cereal and start running away with it, and start eating it.
Right.
And that kind of thing where it's, it doesn't last long. She doesn't run for 15 minutes, but she'll grab a handful and start eating it, like it's that kind of thing. And then she'll dump the bag and she won't, so I don't know if that's, again, my struggle, where it gets hard to think for me, or if it's something,
Yeah. So, let's see. So there's a whole lot of good stuff in here. So I think in general, the idea that, as I say, we just focused on setting limits. But what Julie said about special time being kind of like the antidote to having to feeling frustrated around setting limits. So I think the more special time you can give your five-year-old, the better.
Mm-hmm.
The more cooperation you're going to get in those moments, the less off-track behavior you're going to see.
Okay.
It's not that you won't see it because, she's five and when she goes off track from maybe some tough thing that happened at kindergarten or that day or first grade that day, I guess she's probably in kindergarten, some feeling of disconnection, maybe like you've been busy for a while and so she's feeling disconnected, she still is going to go off track. And in that moment of going off track, she's not going to remember, I can't do this because my dad has a hard time setting a limit, because of his disability. That's that's beyond the capacity of a five-year-old, and it's also beyond the capacity of anybody who goes off track.
Mm-hmm.
So at special time, giving her more connection, more of a sense of, you giving her your undivided attention, you taking the less powerful role, when you do special time is going to, it's the way I describe it like this is, when it's flu season and we know there's lots of germs flying around, we do everything we can to try to protect our kids, from those germs or strengthen their immune system. So they get more sleep, they, make sure they eat well, we up their vitamins, their probiotics, whatever your homeopathic, whatever your protocol is for flu season, you start to put that into place. Well, special time is the same way. Whenever there's a situation, or really any parenting situation, the antidote to the difficult situation is we always start with ramping up the special time, more special time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just going to – that doesn't mean that she's never going to go off track, but hopefully she will go off track less.
Mm-hmm.
Then the bigger question of, knowing what limit to set and when to set it, I just mentioned the tool listening partnerships. Well, I have found with that, because I told you I'm a recovering permissive parent, right? And
right.
I thought that it was my job to kind of never say no to my child. I mean, I can remember there was one day after preschool that his preschool ended at noon and we literally stayed there till 4 o'clock because he didn't want to leave. And I thought it was my job that I was just, thank goodness I found out about special time, which is like I could give him 10 minutes of my undivided attention to fill his connection cup. I didn't have to give him 4 hours, right?
Right.
So So I bring those kinds of things to my listening partnership. What are my expectations here? What's getting in the way? A listening partnership is when you partner with another parent, you divide up the time. One person listens to you for 15 minutes, and then you listen to them for 15 minutes. You make an agreement. When I'm listening to you, I won't interrupt. I won't try to fix you. I'm just going to hold the thought that you're good and you're going to figure it out. And so that's the place for me to kind of, well, am I setting this limit because, you know, I'm worried about what my son's going to be like at 20? Am I setting this limit because I'm worried about what other people are thinking about me? Or am I setting this limit because it's really important and it's important for how our life works? It's also helped me figure out things like what I call unworkable situations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us, if there was something that my son was eating that I needed him to not eat as much or only eat at a very short period of time, or eat, you know, only eat a not a short, but, you know, only eat infrequently or eat at a particular time, that food would go up at a place where he couldn't reach it. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's what I call avoiding an unworkable situation.
Right.
For my son,
I've done some of that,
yeah. So those are the kinds of things that I figured out, like, oh, it's always a struggle to try to get you off your screen on a weeknight when you have homework to do. So here's the limit. On Sunday afternoon, the iPhone goes away in a closet, and it does not come out until Friday evening or even Saturday afternoon, depending on the amount of homework you have to do. Mm-hmm. So one of the things about this approach is that we don't tell parents what limit to set. You know, we don't say, oh, you should only breastfeed for this long, then you should wean, you know, or, you know, our approach is you have your own natural intelligence and you know what's best for your family. And then here's the tools that we think will help you get there. Mm-hmm. Special time, avoiding unworkable situations, taking all of our concerns to listening partnerships, doing as much play with our kids as we can, taking the less powerful role. You know, all of those are ways that we can think that we can make life work best in our family. Is any of that?
Yes, that helps. And just, by the way, I am very familiar with these tools. I do reevaluation counseling. You've probably heard about
that. Oh, okay. Right.
So I am familiar with it. And
so you know listening partnerships. Yeah.
Yes, I do very well. and it is helpful. I'm just
awesome.
Learning to be a parent more and more, I guess, and take whatever resource I can. And I guess with the special time, though, I was wondering, sometimes it's bizarre. I've never experienced this, but sometimes my daughter will say, no, she doesn't want to do special time. Like, no. Like, would you like to do something? And I'm like, I've never heard of that. you know, and I think some of it may be because in general, I try to follow her lead as much as possible, as much as humanly I can. I'm not a fully permissive, I'm not doing everything she wants to do every single moment, but as much as I can, I try to just follow, you know, because I know they're young and, you know.
Yeah.
We could be overbearing, you know, as adults. So I try to follow her lead, but what do you make of when a child says,
no? Yeah, so if my son says he doesn't want special time, I take that as a sign that he's off track. So
okay.
I set the limit that we're going to do special time.
Okay.
Even if all I do is set the timer and just give him my undivided attention, even if at 12, if giving
right.
him my undivided attention is through a closed door,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've just – you know, I'm just seeing that as like, oh, you're off track. And so I'm going to – what I know is that giving you my warm attention helps you get back on track.
So
I might, you know, I might playfully set special time and, like, I set the timer and I periodically through that 10 minutes I beg, oh, please, please do special time with me. Oh, I need my special time with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it, that's, you know, so it,
right.
it, yeah.
So it's actually a good clue to let you know they maybe they're off track if they're saying, no, I don't want to do special time. It's like...
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's very helpful.
Yes.
And the last thing was one of the first things I brought up is, like, what about, you know, we need to go and you're trying to get them to laugh or whatever, and they're just like, you know, no, we need to get to school now. We do need to get, and, like, there's, like, no movement physically, like, not running around, but just, you know, still sitting and playing or, you know.
Yeah. So, again, special time. But see, the great thing about special time, for especially for those of us that do tend to be on the permissive side, the great thing about special time is that we have to set a timer. So there's a limit. So when the timer goes off, that's the end of play, and then it can be, okay, sweetie, come on, we're going to get dressed now. So there's a couple of things. One is to do special time first. Then moving right from special, that's the end of play, right? That is the end of play. Now we move to get ready for school. The other is just, you know, if you, you know, it's sort of keeping in mind like, oh, this rushing is making me tense. So if we started 15 minutes earlier, I would be a little bit more relaxed. So I'm telling you three things, special time, then transition, because that's a limit. Do what's going to make you be able to be more relaxed if that's maybe starting 15 minutes earlier. And then ultimately, Dan, if they're not listening to us when we say, come on, sweetie, it's time to get dressed, that means they're off track.
Right.
And then we do have to bring the limit. Even if it's just coming close, putting your arm on hers, the idea with setting a limit is not to force the behavior to change, but in bringing your warm, it's a combination of proposing the change and bringing your warm attention that might get the feelings. And for you, you might have to come close enough that you put a hand on her so that when you say, okay, sweetie, it's time to get dressed, that she's right there. You're right there with a hand on her when she tries to run. That might be, I don't know because I'm not in your situation. I don't know if that physically will work for the two of you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that might be what you have to start practicing in order that she feels your connection so that she either feels your connection so that she can say, okay, Dad, sure. Or she feels your connection enough to have a little tantrum, mm-hmm. and then that releases whatever the tension is that was causing the refusal to do what you asked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Okay. Thanks. Very helpful.
Sure. I'm going to try to wrap up here in a couple minutes. So let me have somebody whose cell phone says Arizona.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hey, so yes, I'm in Los Angeles, but I forget my cell phone.
Oh.
Arizona. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm learning so much about, you know, I do a lot of special time throughout the day with my almost 3-year-old son, but I have never drawn attention to it for him. I've never acknowledged it as being special time. I just sort of go into it and sort of do it for my own. You know, leading that way. So I feel like this is a really helpful tool to have, is to actually start acknowledging that, and for him too, and just sort of calling it something. And so I'm appreciative. This is a brand new way of thinking about it. But my question actually has to do with, I also have a 4-month-old. And sometimes with, I really try to do the gentle touch and get down on his level. And when I'm trying to set a limit, and sometimes that is absolutely impossible because I'm nursing a 4-month-old and we have animals, and sometimes he will, you know, and I try to either clear the way so it's not distractions while I'm doing that so he can still be a part of it, but that doesn't always happen. And so sometimes there's a dog being hit or there's some sort of behavior that's happening. That what are there other tools I can do in this situation?
There are some great articles on siblings on our website, and that's where I'm going to point you, in part because I have only one. So oftentimes I have to throw these kinds of questions to my fellow instructors. Julie, do you have some definitely doing some regular special time with your older son is it in and making it clear that it's one-on-one,
it's his time.
Following his lead, and the timer goes off, so that so here's another little rule of thumb about special time. Set the timer for about one half to two thirds. I'd even say maybe one third to one half of the time you have available. So let's say you're giving him special time during the baby's nap, and the baby usually naps for about 30 to 40 minutes. Give him 10 minutes of special time so that when the timer goes off and you propose that that's the end of play, that then you've left 20-minute buffer time for him to offload any tension that he's feeling. So what you're doing, and I'm sorry, tell me your name.
Sarah.
Sarah. Sorry, Sarah, if you told me. So what you're doing, Sarah, is that you are strategically planning times for him to have a tantrum so that you don't see these little eeks of off-track behavior. Okay, now he hits the dog. Now he knocks this off the table. You know, like those little things throughout the day that are his way of signaling, help, I'm off track. Help, I feel disconnected. Help, you're giving attention to the baby. Help, I've been replaced. Those are the little signals that are, you know, that he's trying to signal you that he needs some help. So if you set up times when, like, so that you can, you're giving him special time, but the timer goes off and you propose that that's the end of play, and now you're going to go do the dishes, and it doesn't, it's not the point that you're actually going to go do the dishes. It doesn't matter. You're just proposing that you're going to move on to a different activity so that the tension that he's feeling, the anxiety that he's feeling about being replaced and you giving your attention to somebody else bubbles up to the surface, and you've left 20 minutes to listen to his feelings about that. So, and you can also strategically set limits at other times. Like, let's say it's not special time, but maybe, dad has the baby, or grandma has the baby, or you've got a eighth grader who's come in to watch the baby, and so, you know, or the baby's happily in the, you know, in the, what do you call it? I forget what I used to, most of the time I just put my son in his car seat, you know, the laying car seat. You know, so maybe he was happily playing in there, right? And you're fixing food for your older one, and he says, and you give him juice in a red cup, and he says, Mommy, I want the blue cup. Well, normally it's no big deal. You would just swap out the cups, right? But the baby's happy. You're feeling resourced. You've got some energy. And you decide that you're going to set a limit of like, no, sweetie. Okay, I always forget which cups I do. Which one? You gave him the blue cup. He wants the red cup. And you say, no, sweetie, we're going to have the blue cup today. So you decide to set this little limit that has nothing to do with sibling rivalry or the dog or bedtime or anything. But it just has to do with the color of cups. And without any explanation, you just set this little limit. Patty says, you know, set limits early and often. And this is strategically looking for a time when you could set a limit that has nothing to do with anything other than it gives him a pretext to have a nice little tantrum over the color of cups, and the baby's happy, and you can be right there and you can listen to him. So the point is that being strategic about giving him more attention, more individual attention, and more opportunities to offload, you may see less of this sort of flyby behavior. You know, he flies by and he smacks the dog. You know, he flies by and he knocks something off the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may see less of that if you're working on this strategically, It's what we call an emotional project where, okay, I'm going to strategically, you know, help you have tantrums, which sounds counterintuitive, but ultimately you'll see you'll see that you'll have less flybys, and you'll have, it'll also help their relationship because there won't be that angst around you're always giving your attention to the baby.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, there's also our new parent podcasts on the website have a small section for helping an older child adjust to a new child. And there's also an article about sibling rivalry. And if this continues to be a problem, you can sign up and get the Ultimate Guide to Sibling Rivalry, which is a whole collection of free resources we put together that some of our best thinking about sibling rivalry that can help them to have a great friendship moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.